The Revo Convo, Episode 56, Cargo Containers as Tiny Houses. So Laura, we are here today with our friend Boomer of Big Boom Designs. You know, I never actually say last names, and I realized why. How many people actually call places and ask for someone by their first and last name? Especially if your name is Boomer. Like, how many people need to have a last name to follow Boomer?
You know, it's interesting how many people call and say Mr. Boomer, and then they say, is Boomer your last name, or is it your first name? And it's Boomer Sassman, but it's rare that I have an issue with it. I've actually met a few people, but only a few named Boomer.
Yeah. So, Boomer, tell us a little bit about, I want to know everything. Laura has met you. She's talked to you already. So she kind of has all the nit and grit about you. But I would love to hear more of the beginning. Like, what is it you do? Why is it I called you today exactly?
Sure. So I guess currently, to kind of give you a landscape of what I'm doing right now, is I run an internet consulting firm called Big Boom Design. And it's really... these days turning more into a full-scale design company and less about just the web. But as far as a little bit of background goes, so I was in high school, I was big into CNC machining, and I thought my career was going to be a machinist. And kind of started stepping through that process, also was really interested in automotive. Got a job working for a guy in Greensboro who kind of saw some potential and kind of made me his project guy. And so one of the projects that we worked on was to take two 40-foot shipping containers and basically turn them into this outbuilding. It was for detailing cars. But basically, we took these two 40-foot containers, we spaced them about 60 feet apart, and we created this kind of a dome, these ribs basically over the center of it, and then we skinned it with some plastic, two layers of plastic with it, like kind of an air bubble in between. And that was really my first introduction into working with shipping containers, and I was a real big fan of working with plasma cutters and that kind of stuff, and I was a welder. And so the container thing just kind of slowly integrated itself into my life. And then in college, I kind of got really obsessed with it. I went to school for industrial design at Appalachian State, and they started teaching us, you know, AutoCAD and Rhino and all these 3D rendering softwares. And so the ideal project for me was to start, you know, doing 3D designs of these container homes. And so that really kind of spiked my interest in... At the same time, I was also starting this web design company and getting into blogging. And so I kind of just innocently started putting some of these container designs that I'd done out on the web, out at my at the time, I thought it was going to be a business blog, but it's really turned into more of a personal blog, and it's bigboomblog.com. And over about a year or two, I noticed that the traffic through keywords tied to shipping container homes was just going through the roof. And this was at a time, you know, 6-7 years ago when you'd say, you know, oh, I do shipping container designs, and people would just kind of scratch their heads. And obviously these days, 5, 6, 7 years later, way more people know about, you know, the niche. And so it's really gained a lot of popularity, and now that blog gets, you know, 10,000 to 15,000 hits a month, primarily around shipping containers. So that traffic has kind of steered my interest a little bit, and it's kind of shown me that... This niche isn't as small as I once thought that it was.
So that's very interesting, because if somebody looks at Big Boom Design, then they're going to come across with basically a geek. They're going to be like, oh, look, he'll set my WordPress up and all that stuff.
right.
But there's actually a very large component of you that's interested in tiny houses and how to take, for lack of better words, a non-traditional building foundation, the cargo container. Which, correct me if I'm wrong, are still available pretty widespread and for pretty affordable prices, especially if you get them when they've already unloaded the cargo, so you're not paying for the cargo as well, just the container.
Right.
Although, I've always been interested in buying sight unseen a cargo container full of random products. So maybe that would be the route I would go, maybe get a few chickens and some made in China bracelets that say like WWJD or something like that. So
that sounds like a reality television show.
Wouldn't that be great? And we could like bid on them they've already done that, haven't they?
He did that.
Jeez, are there any reality? the life of Boomer. I think we Big Boomtown. It could be called Boomtown, a new reality show based on Boomer Sassman. Awesome.
I'd have to find somebody else to star in that, though. I don't know if I'd be the right person. I don't have enough time in the day.
Somebody's playing Boomer Sassman on your own reality show. That'd be awesome.
I think I'd have more fun kind of being behind the scenes and watching that unfold than actually being a part of it.
All right, so now we've entered into a new conversation. So very quickly, folks, if you were to choose someone to play you, who would it be? Ready?
Oh, wow.
Go. I already have my answer. I totally have my answer.
I have no idea. That's probably the hardest question you guys are going to ask me today.
I would like to have either... Mine's a toss-up. I'll either take John Goodman or Kevin James. Either one.
Okay. I'll go with Kevin James on that one.
I think both of them would make a fantastic Drew.
That's good.
Laura, what about you? Certainly it would be Jessica Alba, correct?
No. You know, I've oddly enough actually thought of this question. I would really like Felicia Day to play me in my movie.
Okay, Google search.
She's awesome.
Oh, yes, I am aware of who she is. She was on Buffy.
Was.
Buffy. But I would only want to could you imagine if and this is all another tangent. Oh, by the way, Boomer, that's what I specialize in is tangents and rabbit holes.
Perfect.
So if I would only watch the show Buffy the Vampire Slayer if they like mixed it with a bit of Clueless and a little bit of that Jimmy Fallon short that he does on his show. Ew. So I would only watch Buffy if everyone walked around saying, Buffy? Buffy? Buffy, there's vampires. Buffy? Anyway, nothing to do with tiny houses whatsoever.
Not at all, actually. Right, well, and I do want to know more about tiny houses because the idea of using a shipping container to build a self-contained home is really fascinating, I think, to a lot of people that are interested in the tiny house movement. So... what is kind of the process? How does one take a shipping container from point A to livable tiny house?
Sure. Well, I think it's an important thing first to kind of point out some of the misconceptions that a lot of people, I get to do lots and lots of questions, both over the phone, through email, all kinds of stuff. And most of the time people say, well, they have one of two purposes. They either want to bury it in the ground for whatever reason they have, or they're looking to start the foundation of a building, of a structure. So they kind of want the initial building block that they're going to build something larger on top of. So, as far as where you get them and their cost and that kind of stuff, there's millions of them. There's millions of them that have been decommissioned. They're parked, stacked in port towns all over the country, all over the world. But they only get a fixed number of trips across the ocean, and then they have to be decommissioned. It's this international standard, both the size and shape of them, as well as how many trips they get. So because of that, there's this abundance, big time. And the people who own those kind of holding facilities are now starting to realize, thanks to the internet and thanks to kind of the spiked interest in containers, that they're worth a little bit more than they once were. And so that's almost doubled the price of these containers over the past, 10 years or so. They're still really relatively inexpensive for what they are, for the building block that you get. Essentially, if you were to kind of walk through the process, basically you get to kind of, obviously there's a lot of steps, but I'll kind of break it down. And it is, basically you need to prep your site. You need to make sure that, hopefully you've got a flat spot. If not, you're going to have to put in some kind of concrete pillars or something to keep it level. Once the thing gets dropped off there, and by dropped off, if it's a 20-foot container, you can put it on just a rollback. Like a big AAA truck, basically. If it's a 40 or a 53-foot container, you do have to have some kind of crane there, or even like a really big Draco type thing to lift it off and to place it where you want. And so as you get into the bigger containers, the crane becomes the expensive part of the delivery and moving it. The first thing then you'd want to do is, in my opinion, rip the floors out, especially if it's going to be something that you're going to live in. You have no idea what's been shipped.
Okay, so when you're talking, I'm going to interrupt you for just a second, Boomer.
Yeah.
When you're talking about rip the floors out, let's just make this clear for the listeners. We're not talking about taking a MIG welder or a torch and taking out the actual metal of the floor. We're talking about the cargo floor, which is exactly how we got our reclaimed our reclaimed countertop. We have Malaysian hardwood mm-hmm. countertop that was actually a temperature-controlled cargo floor for some high-end luxury cars, and it made one trip mm-hmm. across the United States and then was decommissioned. And the reason you're pointing that out is the same reason people like Deke Dietrichson spend a lot of time pointing out to people that pallet wood is not always the least toxic reclaim choice you could choose. They carry pathogens, parabens, paraffins, you name it. Any sort of toxin that is available overseas for commercial distribution, I said that like it's a product, for commercial distribution can come over in the cargo floor. Is that correct?
Yeah, and I mean anything from that to you know barrels of liquids and things that could have been spilled, and you really, I mean the biggest thing is you just don't know. And if it's going to be kind of an outbuilding or like a little workshop, and there's going to be you're going to cut a lot of holes and windows and doors and that kind of stuff, it's less of an issue. I would still always tell people seal it, either seal it with some kind of polyurethane or some kind of something. In my opinion, they should be kind of cut out with respirator, and that if you can't really 100% track right. where that container was sent and what it was used for.
And
if it's
probably
mm-hmm.
I was going to say probably the exception to the rule is if you could specifically request a cargo container that had brought Scotch whiskey from Scotland, and at that point you could just lick your force clean.
Ooh. Yes.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Then you can't, I mean, people do buy these things. You know, you can buy them brand new. They're really expensive, and it kind of, in my opinion, that goes against, the whole idea of trying to, salvage these. There's millions. At one point, I heard like 15 million are stacked in the United States alone. And another stat that may be wrong these days, this was years ago, but 1,200 containers every single day are decommissioned into the United States.
I actually don't doubt that, because the same is true of airplanes and such. There's the airplane graveyard that's out in the desert. There's different sort of parts places where there's, large parts of airplanes. It's actually amazing the amount of raw materials wasted in the United States that could be used to create perfectly incredible homes, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of a young married couple. If they could convert, a 747 into a home, it would take the Mile High Club to a whole new level.
Ooh, wow.
It would.
Wow.
Okay, we just lost like 15 of our listeners. They tuned out. They've now left the show.
And the angry emails are about to begin.
Yeah, you can email me at lmlavoy at one.
Hey.
All right, so to get back on track, because I've taken you way far off. So we've taken the floors out, and you were talking about, how many of these things are available. So let me ask you this question, Boomer. I'm Joe Schmo, I'm ready to commit to this project. I have, there's three of us that are going to live in this, and we want to take two good-sized cargo containers. Do I just call the shipyard and say, hey, I want to buy a cargo container?
Yeah, you can. There's a lot of these hubs around the country. I mean, I'm in Asheville, North Carolina. We've got...
Okay, let's just repeat that one more time. We're in Asheville, North Carolina. That would be the great state of North Carolina. That would be the largest and fastest growing state for tiny houses.
Yep. And so we've got quite a few container hubs right around here. Not real, real close. We do have a handful of them, but... For instance, there's a really large spot down in Gastonia. And so most times you just call the place that has a lot of containers. They're going to say, well, just come on down and walk around and we'll pick something out. You can do that. I help folks try and land containers and arrange the delivery and that kind of stuff. And so these days my involvement is I'm kind of a hub for a lot of folks that are looking for either container sales, design services, engineering plans, that kind of
stuff.
So you're
Is that what you are?
Yeah, I might actually get some business cards with that on there now.
I think that you should totally go with Boomer Sassman, container pimp.
You know, I think that the audience that I'd be pitching to, I think they'd be the only type of audience that would actually think that was kind of funny and like that.
Well, I mean, you know.
I don't think you could do that as a Granite or Marvel countertop, distributor or something like that.
You're a broker or distributor in those worlds. But when it comes to reclaimed homes, you're a container pimp.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. So there are a lot of places from a sales perspective. I mean, it's really, really helpful for me, or if you go to anybody, to have kind of an idea about the design that you've got in mind. And so the first thing, I get so many people that say, "Oh, I want to build a container house." I'm like, "Well, how many, how large of a home are you thinking?" And they're like, "Well, 12 containers." And I'm like, "Well, really? Because that kind of doesn't really make a lot of sense." Now, not to knock people that want to do these big, giant castle-type structures with containers, I think it's awesome. Most people, in my opinion, don't have the budget for that kind of thing, just in the cost of the containers themselves. Obviously, you can get a big break if you buy a lot of them. But
can we review,
in my opinion,
do you have kind of a generalization on the cost of a container?
Yeah, and it's a moving target, and nobody should take my exact word for this, but and it also depends on the condition. A lot of it depends on the condition, but for a 20-foot... relatively used container, and this is delivered cost, you're probably looking anywhere from about $1,700 to like $2,500.
Are you kidding me? $2,500 top end? I would have never guessed
that. Wow. And now that's for a 20-foot, and that's delivered. Now, to compare that to like 10 years ago, you could get a 20-foot container for $800 delivered.
Whoa. Wow.
It was unbelievable. And that's when I first kind of got interested in containers. And for years, really kind of harped on the fact that this is so much faster, so much cheaper, so much easier. You can just, like, pop these homes up so quick. And then over a number of years, getting more involved with it, talking to a lot of builders, engineers, contractors, all kinds of people, I realized while it's still a really, really cool, interesting concept, and I'm, really a huge fan and advocate for them, it's not until the fifth or sixth container that you build do you personally save a lot of money. So while it may seem like a phenomenal idea, and it really is, if you're just building this yourself, unless you kind of go low budget with it, you're not going to save a whole lot of money on it. You may save some time, and you're going to end up with a way more interesting home than if you'd taken that money and spent it somewhere else.
Yeah.
But some of the times, if you get involved with some of these contractors that are used to building with traditional just wood, and you start throwing these containers at them, a lot of people start scratching their heads, even when you start talking about how you attach certain things to the walls and how you deal with the foundation, and the insulation is a huge, huge topic. And so you start throwing these curveballs at these people that are really knowledgeable about their industry, but this is kind of an odd transition. Costs can start going through the roof.
Yeah.
And so quickly you've got this project that's more expensive than even a traditional home if you don't really think it all the way through.
Yeah. So, folks, if you're listening to this show, you are listening to Laura and Drew. We're talking with Boomer Sassman, industrial designer, internet consultant. You can find him online at Big Bloom Blog. Big Bloom. You're not a Big Bloom. BigBoomBlog.com. That's BigBoomBlog.com. Of course, you'll find that link in the blog post that coincides with this podcast. We're talking with Boomer today about turning a cargo container or several cargo containers into tiny homes. And I know a lot of you are probably already asking, well, I think a tiny home is 200 square feet. You're saying that this thing is 8 by 20. That's already 160 square feet. If I put two of them together, it's no longer a tiny house. Fine. It's no longer a tiny house. Call it a cargo house. Doesn't matter. We're talking about taking cargo containers and turning them into livable structures, and we are now talking about the whole insulation topic and how we'll put these things together. Because, Boomer, I'm assuming it's not just using Gorilla Glue.
I'm sure that there are some Gorilla Glue container structures out there right now. But
well, you know where I live in Carolina, we just use duct tape.
Well, you should switch over to the Gorilla Tape, man. It's it's the new big thing.
It's the black colored tape. I've used it. Look, my exhaust manifold is hanging on by that Gorilla Tape.
So the insulation topic is probably the most. First question I get is zoning, and then question number two is insulation. How do you insulate these things? And The quick answer is the exact same way you insulate a regular house. Mm-hmm. The difference is you can insulate on the inside or the outside. Either one's fine. You know, the problem with insulating on the inside is you've only got like a little bit over 8 feet to start with. So if you start, you know, insulating it out, whether you use regular traditional vats or if you use spray in foam, whatever it is, you're decreasing that inside space. So, assuming you can get to the bottom and the top of the container, wherever you're going to set this up, in my opinion, you should insulate on the outside. You can create a completely sealed container that way. You're not compromising your space. Obviously, you know, you also then, you can change the outside look of it, which is also a big issue because a lot of neighborhoods and a lot of cities and towns really kind of frown on taking a steel box and dropping it in your yard, you know. Personally, I would love to keep the container, the corrugated steel look, both on the inside and the outside, but then, you know, where do you insulate? So I'd say most people look to insulate on the outside, and you can kind of layer your system out that way much easier, and you can create kind of a water wicking material, and then you can cover that with, you know, some kind of alpha base that sticks, that's sticky, and then you can then, you know, put on your insulation, whether that's a, you know, bad insulation or spray foam or whatever it might be. But then you got to get creative on the inside with, well, how do you hang your stuff? How do you hang your TV or your pictures or whatever it is that you need to hang? And so, you know, well, why not use that? You know, why not? You can still kind of drill in and drill through the wall. It's just, you know, a little bit different than drilling through a 2x4 stud. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so what, typically in a cargo container, what gauge metal are we talking about?
It's thicker than you think. It's about 1/4 inch thick. It depends on how old the thing is. They are an international standard, but there's a lot of different manufacturers around the world. And so it's thicker than you would want to really try and cut with a grinder. You can, but, you know, if you're taking on the project from kind of start to finish, it's probably worth getting a plasma cutter or, you know, getting involved with a machine shop or somebody that does have one that you can borrow a plasma cutter from. They cut like butter with a plasma cutter.
Yeah.
They're a little tough to cut with an oxyacetylene torch, and it's really messy.
Mm-hmm.
It's made, the containers are called, they're made out of a metal called Corten steel, and Corten steel is a little bit unique and sometimes tough to work with, but if you get the right tool, that being a plasma cutter, makes life so much easier.
Right. I do want to take this time, as we talk about some of these tools, I want to take this time and just throw a caution out there to our readers. Folks, this is not a beginner DIY project. This is not something I would recommend you just have some cargo containers delivered and you just, you know, take to it and start doing. It's a little bit more advanced. I would definitely suggest that all of you work with some sort of a consultant or contractor or something of that nature. There are also some safety concerns that you want to think about. One of those, of course, being using torch devices, whether it be acetylene or it be a blowtorch or, you know, be a plasma cutter, whatever, as well as the fact that you're dealing with metal. Anytime you cut metal, you're dealing with a very sharp edge, which, you know, even doing metal roofs on kind of traditional tiny houses, if one of those pieces of metal were to slide down and to get your throat or something like that, it could be a very, very... it could be a dangerous situation, and so I want to make sure that all of you listening are aware that what we're talking about today is not necessarily something we're advocating you just go out and buy some cargo containers and take it out to your backyard and start welding it together.
Agreed. Yeah, it's it at times could be relatively dangerous, and it depends on how far you're trying to take the project. I mean, I've seen everything from actually, one of my most popular designs that's out there on the web is a 20-foot cabin, little hunting, you know, little cabin, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It's like all, it's, we got like little kind of drop-down Murphy bed style. It's got a little loft in it. And so, you know, you can start as small as a single 20-foot container and just kind of make that your little fallout box type thing if you want to. And,
well, and that's
intro into the industry.
I would actually suggest that to people. I would actually say, look, if you're interested in this, just get one cargo container where you're not focused on putting two or three or four of them together, and just focus on turning one into, you know, a habitable spot, because it will at least teach you a lot of things. One of those being, you know, how many windows do I need in this to stay sane before I feel like I'm in a bunker? You know, how do I keep this thing level? One of the things you have to, you also have to think about, and correct me if I'm wrong, Boomer, but one of those things you have to think about is the settling of a cargo container because of the weight. If you were to put one in our region in Eastern Carolina, after, you know, 10 to 12 months, you would, if you had just set it straight on the ground, you'd begin to have some settling that would start to turn your home into a bit of an interesting angle. So, you know, it's good to start small and work your way up, just like with traditional tiny houses. You know, don't just go out and buy a 40-foot trailer and start going to town. You know, get some experience behind you.
Yeah. And also with the 20-foot, I mean, the delivery, the moving of the container is so much easier. I mean, literally you can, you know, it opens up so many doors as far as dealing with people locally on an inexpensive level to get things moved. I mean, I know I'm out in kind of the rural area of Asheville, and man, there's quite a few folks that have tractors that would be big enough to push around or move around a 20-foot container, but start talking about 40-foot, and you really kind of have to get even a small crane in there just to move it, you know,
right,
it around.
Right.
And I will say that there are people in rural North Carolina that will be more than happy to use their tractor to drag their 20-foot container somewhere because they just think that's the coolest thing ever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
not to mention, you know, not to mention a lot of these folks, that's how they derive some much needed secondary income, is renting out their equipment and themselves as operators. I know when we cleared our land for our tiny house, the guy that brought his backhoe over was more than happy to earn some cash on the barrel to use a piece of equipment that ordinarily was just sitting there in his yard waiting for the next job.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit, Boomer, about the design part, because that's really what you specialize in, the design. Have you found any sort of limits to the design, or is it kind of a no-holds-barred sort of thing where your imagination is the only parameter you have to work within?
You know, early on I thought, man, I'm just going to start designing the craziest stuff I can, and I did, and I've got some designs out there that are completely unrealistic designs. And then what happened was, you know, I had a lot of designs floating out there, and then I got a couple questions about some things, and I had somebody that wanted to buy one of the designs that was really out there, really, you know, crazy. And I said, okay, and so we started walking through the process, and then I got involved with an engineer. I worked with a guy in Boone, an engineer in Boone, and he said, man, we can't build this. Nobody can build this. So that was kind of a reality check for me, having never had any traditional, you know, like home construction background. I went to school for industrial design, and we learned all this great software, and I knew how to design on a computer, and I did a lot in the physical world as well, but I'd never taken six containers and stacked them and cut them and welded them and gotten them zoned and all this stuff. And so I quickly realized that while it was a really cool design, it was really popular, I had to kind of be the bearer of bad news and say, well, yeah, this is a cool design, but it's going to cost you a lot of money to try to get an engineer to rework this thing to stamp it. So working with some engineers and some builders has actually kind of reined my designs in a little bit. So I feel like these days the designs that I'm working on and going after are a little bit more realistic, both on a budget standpoint and a you can do this yourself. I mean, I'm really kind of a do-it-yourselfer. I mean, it's rare that I ever, you know, reach out to folks, especially when it comes to like things like cars and on, you know, kind of the hands-on machining side of stuff. So I'm always a big fan of trying to create a design that pushes that limit of you can do this yourself with a little bit of knowledge and a little bit of safety prep. But if you're not used to working with a welder or even a saw, you know, it wouldn't cost you an arm and a leg to actually have somebody get involved and build this for you. So I try to kind of balance that tipping point there between you got to get somebody else or no, you could actually do this yourself. So.
Awkward pause.
Where'd you go, Drew?
Well, I was just thinking of, you know, how this, to me, to my mind, it seems like a daunting process. It seems like there's so much unknown variable to me. I have only spot welded before, and those welds were hideously ugly. I really am not comfortable with the idea of, with wood, I could cut a window inside of our tiny house, and if I screwed up the measurement, I could just continue to use 2x until I, you know, created the size I needed to create. Metal's not that forgiving, and, you know, it's not like you can just throw some studs in there and figure it all out. So I'm just, this is the first time, I think, on the show, Laura, where I have actually just been in awe of the process of what we're talking about, because it seems like something Crystal and I would really enjoy doing, and I think we've even talked about it once or twice, but it's just daunting. I wouldn't know where to start. I mean, I would be fine getting the cargo containers. I could probably get them for free delivered to our house, because, you know, that's how I roll. But but as far as anything else, I would probably end up living in a cargo container that's uninsulated without windows. And I would not even have a front door. I would continue to use the large door that comes on them.
And
I
would just, you can.
I would just jimmy a way to open it up from the inside. And that'd be that.
You know, I'll say this. You know, normally people say, you know, measure twice, cut once. Measure 6 times. Cut half of it. And then measure a couple more times, and then cut the rest of it.
Yeah. Oh, that's...
I mean, you're right. It does. It is way less forgiving in a lot of ways, working with metal. And some of it's just that it's my single biggest passion. I love working with metal, whether that's on an automotive level or on a home size level. That's kind of what sparked my interest early on was, you know, I always wanted to build my own home, but I'm not a great woodworker. I've become much better, but... you know, back in high school when I first found out that people were building homes out of these containers, I was thinking, finally, I can build a metal home, and I can live in it, and I can, like, take a torch and burn out a porthole window myself. And so, you know, some of my explanation about this process may be a little bit jaded by the fact that I'm pretty comfortable with a torch or a welder, but it's the kind of thing that, you know, if you are going to go into it and you really have no background in working with metal or really no interest in it, you can, you know, you can get a box of soapstone. It's basically just like chalk, and it's a container, and you can just start measuring out with tape measure and drawing your marks and wipe them away and do it again until you kind of get to a point where you feel pretty confident about it. And then in a day's time, you know, you could get somebody in there with you know, a bunch of cutoff wheels or ideally a plasma cutter, and they can kind of, you know, help you through the process. In my opinion, I found some welders and some machinists that are way more comfortable working with this kind of stuff than some contractors are,
yeah,
some builders.
Hey, don't get me wrong. I would give it a whirl. I'm telling you, boy, I would. I wouldn't even go with just a window. I would mark out like 20 of them, and I would just pound those suckers out. But
so that's a good segue into the structure of these things. And I said that, well, you know, one of the two reasons that people reach out is they want to bury them, and so. One thing I definitely want to get out of this podcast is that you cannot take a container, 20, 40, or 53-foot length, and bury it in the ground and cover it with dirt.
Yep. It will collapse on itself eventually. Am I correct?
Oh, completely. So these things are wildly strong at their corners. You can stack these things. They're made to stack. I mean, they stack them 9 containers high on a boat, and they ship across the ocean back and forth and back and forth. But when it comes to... the structural integrity of these things, when you just push directly on the side or directly on the top, they will buckle in a heartbeat. And so that's something that a lot of people don't realize. They think that it's just this, like, indestructible box. But they're not. They're really not. They've got to be, you know, able to be transported, so, you know, they can't be too heavy. But, and you can bury them, obviously, but you do need to go through the proper motions and reinforce these things, especially if you're going to be putting a lot of weight on the top, regardless of what's going to go in the thing.
Yeah, it's a good point, because you see these shows like, you know, Doomsday Preppers and stuff, and they go and they you know, they sink a school bus or something like that. Folks, if you do not understand the weight distribution and weight capacity and eventual weight gain of Earth on a man-made structure, do this experiment. Take yourself a you know, red Solo cup. Regular red Solo cup. Go ahead, dig yourself a little hole in your dirt and put the cup down in there. Check back a day later. My daughter is playing with water, by the way, y'all. you know, go back a day later and undig your cup and it'll be fine. Maybe go back a week later. But then go back 6 months later and see what's happened to your cup. It will eventually begin to cave in on the sides because everything from rain to erosion to you just walking on the dirt or parking on the dirt or anything like that will continue to compress and pack that dirt down until it adds a certain amount of pressure on your structure. So, Boomer, that's a good point you brought up. Folks, please do not go and bury your house and go live in it and not tell someone to come check on you in 6 months.
Yeah. Definitely.
Not to mention the fact that there's only a limited amount of air once you seal them, folks. So you may want to consider some sort of ventilation system.
Well, and, you know, personally, if I were ever going to, you know, bury some kind of structure, you know, why go to that trouble without having some kind of cool escape hatch that pops you up, like, you know, 1,000 feet away through some, like, little rabbit hole thing under a big rock.
Yeah.
You know? So I would, one day that may be in my future. We'll see.
Well, you need to start with the very first step, and that is to take a good-sized piece of aluminum foil and fit it to your head and then twist the top into an antenna. That way you'll fully match the part of why you would bury a shipping container anyway.
Yep.
And build an exit under a fake rock.
Yes.
Well, that's almost taking it to the gnome stage, the hobbit stage, where you like, you know, you have some, you go in one way and then you go through some mazes and inside there's like a full brewery and all that sort of stuff. And then you come out the other side and some rock.
Awesome.
Which, by the way, I think I've just come up with a new idea for us. I think we should create a tap room inside of a cargo container buried in the ground.
I think it's a great idea.
We live in Asheville.
It would
so
only work in Asheville.
For that.
It would only. Could you imagine entering into like the side of a mountain on the outskirts of Asheville, and it's like a full on tap room, but you don't come out the entry. You come out like on another side of the mountain.
Under a fig.
You know, Sierra Nevada is getting constructed right now down by the river, and so you know maybe this is good timing to go to them and say, hey.
Yeah.
You already got the equipment here. They probably already have some containers there for the material.
Totally. Totally.
You got a little hole, and we'll have to bury it, guys.
Well, I'm here to tell you, after about 3 or 4 pints, if I had to come out of a door that was on the other side of a mountain from where I went in, things would get rough for me real quick.
Suddenly, you're like, where did I park?
Yeah, totally.
Especially
could you
if there was an army crawl involved.
That would be like a whole nother level of drinking game, is to just sit there and watch people try and figure out where they parked when they came out.
I kind of love it. And once again, this podcast has devolved into tiny houses and beer.
Yes, it has. What if you built the second parking lot identical to the first, but there wouldn't be any cars there? So they would come out and be like, where did I park? Oh my gosh, someone stole my car.
Everybody.
It's brilliant. Guys, we come up with so many great ideas on this show. This is like the Algonquin Round Table in podcast version.
Tiny Home Idea Center.
It totally is.
Exactly.
Well, Boomer, I want to ask just a couple more questions before we close out. And
sure.
One of those questions is this. Where do you see cargo containers fitting in terms of evolving sort of the tiny house movement and the sustainable living situation in America?
You know, I can only just hope for the greatest success. I can, you know, like I said, like I kind of hinted at earlier, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago when I first kind of started getting involved with this, and I would mention to people what I was working on, and I was putting designs out there. It was really foreign to everybody that you could even, you know, that you could do this. And obviously I am not a pioneer in the sense that they've been doing this since the 60s. I mean, they've been doing these container homes for a long, long, long time. You know, my knowledge and interest and involvement with the internet is really what kind of brought a lot of attention to, I guess, me and my website. There's plenty of people out there doing way cooler, bigger, better things than I am. I just, you know, through Big Boom Design and the web, know how to get web traffic. So that's kind of artificially geared a lot of traffic my way, but you know, they're so much more well-known these days, and I don't want to take credit for that, but I feel like the internet and the people who are kind of actively answering questions and helping push this trend, the internet is the bank, you know, for a lot of the spark that people now understand that this is an actual thing that you can do, and you can do it yourself on a relatively low budget or a really, really, large budget, and so I can only hope that some of these 15 million containers that are stacked up around the United States, in some cases, they block out the sun hours before the sunset because there's like a wall of containers, you know? And so that's just crazy to think about, you know? So I can only hope that they do get used in a more creative, constructive way. I know that there's some really large projects going around that are happening all over the world. There's a 1,000 container hostel in Amsterdam. There's really high-end homes. There's really, really low budget cabins. There's everything in between. And so, to me, I guess it's such an interesting concept of building where it's more of a deconstruction type of construction than a construction type of construction. Yeah. Well, you know, way different than a traditional, like, oh, let's cut the ends off these boards and then you create this huge pile of waste. Whereas on a container construction, or container structure, you put out a doorway and you are very, very conscious of
Let's point out,
and now you've got that metal to use, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And let's point out for a second, you know, you think about, you know, I said something earlier about, you know, windows and doors and that sort of stuff. Let's talk about this for a second. So, you know, in Amsterdam, it's a good case. You know, they have a beautiful student dormitory that's comprised of cargo containers. I think it's about 8 high and it's maybe 25 or 30 across. So it's a very large, and they're stacked in two, like, towers, and on the inside of the tower is kind of a common area, a green space. So, you know, Americans would typically think, oh, that's too claustrophobic, it's too small, you know, I'd feel so closed in. This kind of goes back to the course I taught, how to decorate a tiny house, because one of the easiest things to do is get around the need for windows by using the natural light that is available. So if these are oriented to the eastern and western sky, you've got sunrise and you've got sunset, you know, your brightest hours in terms of ambient light. On the inside, you paint with light colors. You utilize LED bulbs that don't put off heat, that are a bit of a warm glow, kind of reminiscent of an incandescent bulb. And then you utilize things like mirrors to reflect the light that's coming in the front and coming in the back. And before you know it, you've got a space that feels every bit as open as any home with the same amount of windows. The difference is, going back to what you were talking about, Boomer, is the insulatory property. By not having to put in all those windows, you're losing less of your insulatory property than if you had, you know, a window every 6 or 8 feet in a small space. So it really, in my opinion, it's a clever idea to take, you know, what we've talked about and what they estimate are some, you know, 2 million idle shipping containers at any given time, and reutilizing them for purposes of, you know, university housing, to fight the homelessness issue, subsidized housing, affordable housing. It really is quite a brilliant idea, and I'm surprised that more larger companies have not gotten behind the effort and found a way to kind of build a revenue model out of it.
Yeah, well, and when you look at, you know, how poorly the manufactured home industry has gone, you know, not to say that it didn't meet a demand, but when you take that same model and look at creating kind of an assembly line process indoors where you could pull these containers in, you could make your cuts, you could almost turnkey, you can offer a couple different designs. You know, if my web business were making millions right now, I would definitely be, you know, going after Clayton Homes or one of these larger manufacturers and saying, guys, you guys are missing the boat. Like, you know, no pun intended on that, but, you know, you guys really need to, you know, dedicate a, you know, a couple hundred thousand square foot building and get involved with this. I mean, why not?
You know, I was just thinking, I lived in Brooklyn for some time, and, you know, at the end of the day, what do you see a store do in a city like Brooklyn at the end of the day? They close their glass, and then they pull down a chain link door, you know, that comes from the ceiling. If I were to take a convenience store and build it inside of a cargo container that sat there, at the end of the day, nobody would be able to break into my store.
Right. When people say, you know, a lot of times I get the thing where they say, well, why not just go to Lowe's or Home Depot and buy a, you know, $1,400, you know, little aluminum roof thing and this and that. And it's like, well, yeah, sure, you can do that. But when you look at the structural integrity of one of these containers, you can't match it. I mean, they're bulletproof. Don't take my word on this. They're bulletproof. They're bombproof. They're fireproof. They're windproof. They're waterproof. They're, you know, depending on the quality of the container that you buy, you know, they're made to ship across the ocean in crazy storms and weather, carrying very precious cargo. I mean, you know, what more do you want out of a building block than that? I mean, it's ideal.
Yeah, totally. Well, look, we are talking with Boomer Sassman of Big Boom Designs, and he is just a serious cargo container pimp. He is ready to help you get a cargo container onto your space so that you can start building something that is a bit more sustainable and that takes advantage of a really affordable option. So if you're not looking to be totally mobile, although there is some mobility to it, you can always get a U-ship flatbed to come out and pick up your cargo container and take it away down the interstate if you like. Or you can, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe if you own a flatbed, you don't even take it off. I don't know. Whatever your municipality allows, you can put it inside of a mountain, I suppose, and hide behind a rock. But
yeah, I mean, as far as, you don't have to get a permit to move them on the road. Now, you may as far as the weight goes, but as far as the width, you definitely don't. You know, I've kind of got dreams of at some point having, I've got a lot of family up in Canada, and I'd love to build a 20-foot container, little cabin, and, you know, just keep it on a truck and just drive it up there for the, you know, for the summertime and spend a couple months and drive my little house back down. I mean, obviously the folks that have a traditional tiny home built on a trailer would probably think that that's a crazy idea from the weight standpoint, but the versatility, in my opinion, is a little bit more impressive with
absolutely.
Doing
so. Absolutely. Well, Boomer, we thank you, man, for being on the show and talking about something that I think a lot of people, I know Tiny House Swoon has covered, you know, quite a few cargo container options, and so it really has captured the imagination of a lot of people. And if folks start to think less about, you know, dreaming about it and more about doing it, there are folks like you out there that they can contact and get some really inspiring designs from. So I want to thank you for being on the show today.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Yeah, if anybody's, you know, so these days my involvement with containers is, you know, I help people with design services. I can do full turnkey designs. I get everything from, you know, pretty thought out designs to, hey, here's a napkin that I sketched out some stuff on. I've aligned myself both with some folks that do container sales, engineering, construction, primarily in North Carolina and around Western North Carolina specifically. But yeah, I'd love to answer any questions anybody has. And so you can get a lot of information at bigboomblog.com. And soon I'll be kind of launching a separate website and business specifically around the container side of stuff right now.
Awesome.
Kind of lumped in with a lot of other personal things there. So
yeah. So be sure to contact Boomer if you want to get a really nice design, or if you see him out at the pub, buy him around and he'll sketch you one on a napkin.
Definitely.
That's awesome. And then you can frame it in your tiny container home.
Totally.
Yep.
Totally.
Yep.
So this is just so cool. Now I just want to go look at pictures. So hey, Boomer, thank you so much for being on the show today. We look forward to it. Folks, if you're listening to this show, we've been talking to Boomer Sassman, Big Boom Designs. Go check him out on the web. Find out more about living in your own personal cargo container as a tiny house, small house, or otherwise sustainable living situation. Thank you very much, Boomer. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Take care.
Bye.
All right. So the question, Laura, is this. Would you or would you not consider living in a cargo container?
I totally would. Absolutely. You know, it's great because we've gotten to know Boomer, you know, from living in the same town. And, you know, we have mad respect for him because, you know, we could take two 2x4s and put them together using nails, but the idea of cutting something out of metal is just baffling. So it's so cool, and I would totally live in something like that.
Yeah. I don't know if I would live in one necessarily, and not because it's not livable. It just is not, because my mind is in other places right now, so it's hard to fathom. But I would definitely love to have a studio in a cargo container. And for those of you who are like, well, why would you need a studio, Drew? I do a massive amount of computer work and some, you know, literary work, that sort of thing. And I just would love to have, I think I would love to have a simple, intelligent design that I could use as a studio/workspace. I think that'd be awesome.
Yeah, and it would be great for that. I mean, you know, just like the tiny house movement, there are so many things you can do with a container space. You know, lots of people are building tiny houses as peripheral buildings or, you know, studios or offices and things. And you can do exactly the same thing with these container homes. And it's so sustainable that it really does take care of a need to get these container homes out of their, you know, graveyards and into a practical purpose.
Yeah, I would really love to see some larger companies that just that have the resources to really move on a project and start to make these available in a large scale, a safe, don't you know, mind you, a safe larger scale application. I think some universities and even some communities could really use some affordable compact housing like this that thinks more vertical than horizontal. So that was really cool, Laura. I thank you for finding Boomer. Of course, he's another North Carolinian, which some people probably by now are like, well, do y'all ever look outside of North Carolina? Folks, we look. They're just not out there. They're all in our state hanging out. So it's nothing we can do about it. If you think that there's someone in your state that we should be talking to on this podcast, please feel free to contact us. You can reach me via email at andodom@gmail.com, or you can reach Laura at
lmlavoie@gmail.com.
Absolutely. And we look forward to hearing from each one of you. We thank you for joining us on this episode 56 of the Revo Convo, talking with Boomer Sassman of how to convert a cargo container into a tiny house. My friends, thank you for joining us. As always, we hope you have a wonderful week, and we will see you back next week on this same podcast channel at the same time with another exceptional guest who probably will be from North Carolina. Thank you so much for joining us. Take care.